All right, brave guys in the front row.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Hey, let me call you back.
Guys are you're fighting the trend, the back row Baptists.
That's good.
Well, I was just used to always sitting in the front.
That's very good.
I appreciate it.
Hey, Tom. Can you guys make a space?
Oh, yeah, I need a seat. That's
right there.
Two, you want to give any of us two seats?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pastor, yeah.
Welcome in, guys. Welcome in. We're gonna hop right to it and get started right at 2. Appreciate you guys coming in. I was a little nervous. I thought we had a sermon in there. And I thought, what time am I actually going to get started? But we have one more session after this, I think. So, still a couple seats up front. Are you saving these two seats, sir? You are. Okay. There's still some space. Plenty of room. Come on in. Got two here. Got two right over here. Mosey on in. Appreciate you guys taking the time, and you have many choices. I appreciate you flying with me today. We're gonna get started. You guys don't have to stop talking. I'm just filling up the empty space. There's still two seats here. There's two there. Got two right here. Plenty of room. You can sit there. That works. Yeah, that works. So, it started in about 60 seconds, I think. I also have the coveted after lunch spot. plenty of room. Come on in. There's two seats there. Got one, two up here.
One here.
One right there. Yep, plenty of space.
I can move if you need me to move.
I will. Yep, I appreciate that. So come on in, plenty of space still, plenty of room. We got two up front here, but if you're committed to go somewhere else, that's totally fine.
Danny,
hey.
Like, I'm no big man. Shows up late. Well, too bad.
We're gonna start on time, end on time.
Well, so I said save me a seat. I didn't mean right in front of me.
We're men, and we are not afraid of sitting in the front. And I will try not to get anybody wet up front here. So, hey gentlemen, I'd just like to ask. I'm going to ask the Lord to bless our time. Thank you again for coming on in to this session. I really appreciate it. Let's ask the Lord to bless our time. Father, you have called us to be your ambassadors in the world and to be peacemakers like your son made peace. And so I ask that you would bless our time, help us to understand your will, your way in the world, and help us to live that out. Lord, thank you for your grace and kindness. We thank you for Jesus Christ. And we pray this in his name. Amen. Our time today is not going to be about becoming more impressive or doing bigger things. It's about being the kind of man who, when your presence in the place that you find yourself changes the environment around you. Every room that you walk into has a temperature, right? And that temperature is cold, it's hot. Somebody has set the thermostat. And in the world that we live in, someone sets the temperature of the rooms that we're in, and we contribute to it, right? When we enter a space, you want to be the kind of man who sets the temperature of the spaces that you're in. And so we're going to be talking about that today. My clicker is going to cooperate. Who am I? My name is Keith Meyer. I was a pastor in Salisbury, which is part of the BCMD, Salisbury, Maryland, for 20 years. That's my family there. I've got four boys, my lovely wife, Nancy, who I've heard a couple guys flub this today, so I did the math. I've been married for 29 years, 9 months, and 6 days. been in church my whole life. That's me out in front of First Baptist Church of Union, New Jersey, holding a smiley face. And those are my two dogs, Huey and Winston. A friend of mine took this picture, and I'm eating squid, and so I figured I would take a picture of it. I work for a ministry called the Matthew 5-9 Fellowship. We believe that a polarized country needs a peacemaking church. Yes, sir. I grew up in Union, New Jersey. Nice. Yes. Neighbors. Awesome. Yeah. The Matthew 5-9 Fellowship supports evangelical Christian leaders and pastors in shepherding their communities to live out the gospel and place their identity in Jesus Christ above partisanship and societal divisions. It's not to say that the things that we have strong feelings or opinions about are unimportant, but they should never be elevated above our identity in Christ. And so we help leaders navigate these kinds of tensions. I want you to take out your phones, open up your camera. I'm going to put something up on the screen. And I want you to answer this question. You scan that QR code, and what you type is going to come up on the screen. So don't say you're ugly, unless you want to say I'm ugly. But what do you think of when you think of men as peacemakers? Men as peacemakers. What do you think of? What comes to mind?
Law enforcement.
There you go. All right, and you can see here it says one participant typing. So we know how many people are logging in and connecting.
I don't have service in the building.
So yeah, me too.
My phone is dead.
Calm the waters. Leaders. Peacemakers are leaders. One of the things about the way that this works is the more people type something, the larger it gets, or the color will change as more people say it. So we've got strong-willed, a protector, stability, constant. Even keel, loving, to love people before ideas. Amen to that. Yeah. A listener, conflict resolution. Yeah, somebody who can move into space and bring calm. Godly, kind listeners. There you go. Somebody did it. Yeah. De-escalation. Yes, somebody who can talk people down, and who can turn the tide. Got one person typing. Going to let you get in there, and then we're gonna move on. Want to be mindful of our time. Oh, now three people are typing. All right, that's totally fine. Go for it. All right. Okay. It's not updating. Anyway, why does peacemaking matter? Why is this important? Peacemaking is important because people are not just shaped by what they believe. They're shaped by how conflict is handled, right? You learned that when you approached somebody in a particular way in a conflict and they reacted to you, or the way that conflict evolved and changed, that shaped the way that you interact with that person. It shaped the environment that you live in. And maybe now you walk on eggshells, or maybe your relationship is stronger. The culture that we live in trains us to see people, very often, to see them as enemies. But Jesus trains us, teaches us to see people as image bearers. Every environment has a tone. Every environment has a temperature. Someone's setting it. And if you don't set it, it will be set for you.
This seems like the natural exception is that they want to look on the bad side of life instead of the good side.
Many times that's true. And the call to peacemake is to engage in the environment, no matter who that person is, and try to bring the gospel into that environment. Man's calling, when you think about what men are called to, we've been talking about that today. Paul says, act like men. When he does this, he ties it to watchfulness, steadiness, strength, love. And men, as we've already heard today, are constantly being pulled to smaller stories, whether it's our own comfort, whether it's success, control, avoidance. But the calling to be a peacemaker, to act like a man, is deeper. It's not a performance focus where you prove yourself. It's not dominance where you're trying to control others. We're certainly not advocating for passivity where you withdraw and protect yourself. And it's not a distraction where you give your energy to lesser things. Peacemaking, as we define it at the Matthew 5:9 Fellowship, is the active pursuit of reconciliation, justice, and harmony, mirroring God's heart for restoration. When Jesus comes into the world, he brings these things with the gospel. And so we want to do that as well. Just as God in Christ reconciled to humanity to himself, we're called to be God's agents of peace, restoring relationships, challenging hostility with love, and working for righteousness in a polarized world. When we talk about peacemaking, we need to remember that we need to begin with ourselves. It starts with us. So what you're going to hear today is not try harder, be better. We're not talking about being addicted to conviction. So often that happens where you enter a room and someone tells you that you're terrible and you walk away feeling good because you felt the experience you were supposed to have, right? Like I heard how terrible I was and I'm just going to pray harder. But what we want is to focus on humble honesty, because you cannot share a peace that you do not possess yourself. We start, when we talk about peacemaking, with Matthew chapter 7, verses 3 through 5. Jesus says, "Why do you look at the splinter in your brother's eye, but you don't notice the beam of wood in your own eye?" If you've been in church your whole life, like myself, you might not think that that's hysterical, right? But that is truly, I think, an absurd, humorous image, right? When Jesus says, you're concerned about a speck in your brother's eye, but you got a plank, a wooden beam sticking out of your own eye, and you're gonna come towards somebody with this plank, and you're gonna try to get the speck out of their eye, they're gonna say, whoa, not only are you gonna hurt me, right, with the beam that's in your eye, but I don't know that you're qualified to be removing anything from anybody's eye if you can't get it out of your own eye. Hypocrite. Jesus says, first take the beam of wood out of your eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. When we start with ourselves, three big ideas. First, get the log out of your own eye, right? Deal with your own junk first. And then you will see clearly, right? When we deal with what we're ignoring, when we process, get humble, get real, come before the Lord and others and deal with our own stuff, our vision starts to clear up and we start to see things more clearly. Now, this is not, I leave my brother alone with his problem because I'm so focused on dealing with my own. But as my vision improves and I get clarity, then I'm able to help others get the speck out of their own eye. My desire to help others needs to be founded on the fact that I'm being honest before the Lord about my own struggles and my own problems. We bring the whole of ourselves to whatever conflict we're trying to make peace in. Whatever environment we're trying to stabilize or be a man in, we just need to be aware of what we're bringing to that environment and not act like it's all somebody else's problem. So how does peacemaking become culture? How does one man becoming more honest, more stable, more truthful, actually change a family, a workplace, or a church? And this is where the concept of social norms becomes incredibly important. Now, I'm going to move through this quickly because I want to give you guys time to discuss and talk amongst yourselves. We're gonna do this. We're going to have a group activity where you guys can listen and interact with each other. So pay attention because I'm just going to hit the gas pedal and move along. And you might think, how much material is there going to be? There's going to be some, but the reason I'm moving through it quick is so that we can get you guys talking. We're going to talk about understanding norms, then shaping them, and then how we put them into practice. So what is a norm? Okay, norms are not just behaviors. They're not just something that we see. They're the informal rules that govern behavior with a group. They define what's expected, what's acceptable, and what will be reinforced. They're not always clear to you when you are just swimming in them, but they are there and they are controlling the environment that you're in. You feel them immediately, right? It would be strange if somebody turned their chair around when they walked in and sat facing that wall, right?
Yeah.
That would be strange. You just sit down and you face the teacher or the screen, right? And we have norms in our culture that govern our behavior. Men tend to prefer parallel activity over direct engagement. What does that mean? It means that when men gather together, right, they work together, or they watch a game together, or they do something as a group. Whereas women, when they get together, a lot of times, what do? They don't have an activity. They're just getting together to talk or to relate to one another, right? That's a norm. Hey, come on over to my house. Well, for what? To watch a game, right? And then you're like, oh, okay, I'm there, right? Men tend to give less verbal affirmation to one another. Men tend to hand out good jobs, right? When someone has actually done a good job, right? Whereas women are like, look at you, you're beautiful, you can do it, right? You know, like they give out verbal affirmation much more freely than men do. If I just walked up to you and said, man, you look fantastic today, you'd be like, you're weird. What's up with that? So that's just a little bit, just some surfacing of what norms are. And they are everywhere. Last night, thinking about this, giving this talk, when I went to the hotel I was staying at, I thought, I'm going to walk into the elevator, I'm going to face the back wall. And just stand there facing the back wall. And then when I get to my floor, I'll turn around and walk out. Because nobody does that, right?
Right.
The norm is you face the door and you look at everybody that steps on, and then they turn and face the door as well. That's what we do. Why do norms work? Why do they work? They work because we have a natural desire to belong in community. We have a fear of being rejected from community, right? In the garden, when God created Adam, it was not good because he was alone. And so what did God do? God put him in a group, right, with someone else. And humans have always clumped together in groups. We have always formed societies, and we've had friend groups. And norms are a way that we keep our groups working, and they're reinforced through repetition. I want to talk a little bit about conflict and norms. You can share or use the Slido here, for those of you who don't have service. What are some of the norms? What are some of the unwritten rules around you when conflict shows up? Whether it's at work, at church, or in your family. Getting defensive is a behavioral posture, right? Not necessarily a norm. Anyone else? Unwritten rules that govern conflict. How about we don't say anything when there's conflict?
Avoidance.
We don't call it out. We avoid it. Instead, we talk to others. Mm-hmm. Right? That's a norm. I judge behavior that I see, and then I go talk to my wife about it. instead of talking directly to you, right? Like, because what we don't want to do is make the room awkward by having a conflict, right? We mind our own business, right? We say it's better not to interrupt the group by taking sides. We say, I'm going to pray about that, right? I'm going to pray about that before I try to deal with the situation.
No.
What's that?
I thought that was how pastors said no.
I'll pray about it. Yeah. That's how church members say no too. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit. I'm going to move on. Sorry for you two who were typing there. Let's talk about perceived norms. We are wise enough to pick up on what's going on in a group, but sometimes we pick up on what we think a group's norms are as we're trying to settle in into whether it's in a church or into our workplace, right? The norm might be that what we tried to resolve a conflict once, but it got worse. So we don't deal with conflict, right? Confronting things only makes things worse. Or we learn around here, people who speak up or who point out problems tend to become the problem. And so it's better to stay quiet. Or we say, I've looked around and I've seen some problems and no one speaks up at all. And so we start to say, no one speaks up around here. That's something that we perceive as the norm of the group. Yes, sir?
Taboos.
What's that?
Taboos.
Taboo subjects. Yeah, we don't
talk about taboo subjects.
Right. What aren't you supposed to talk about at Thanksgiving? Religion.
Religion.
Politics, right? We keep these subjects off the table because people might get upset.
Right.
And we're here to eat turkey. Positive norms are, these are behaviors that can have a positive impact and encourage positive beliefs and behaviors in people. And so there are ways in which addressing certain things can shape society for good. Now, if you grew up, when I grew up in the 1980s, out of nowhere, there was a sudden... There were all of a sudden all the TV shows were having an emphasis on drunk driving. 160 different shows included drunk driving storylines over a four-year period in the 1980s. Do you know what happened? Drunk driving incidents dropped by 30% because people saw that it was negative. And they talked about it on these shows, and people watching those shows started to change their behavior. That's an example of a positive norm. We talk about a problem, and you see society change.
One problem is a person speaks up before they put their mind in gear.
Yes.
And they say something before they know what they said.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just stirs up trouble.
Yeah. Be quick to listen, slow to speak, right? My remote is not cooperating with here. Who shapes norms? Who shapes them? Here's an answer for you. Men shape norms. We do. Men have enormous power in social situations. Men possess power, which is the capacity to act or influence others, right? You'll hear this proverb repeated at times. As goes the father, so goes the family, right? Men have enormous influence over society. When we think about who shapes norms, we shape them in two different ways, right? Formal power comes from positions and institutions. I am the pastor, right? And therefore, positionally, I have an ability to say, this is how things should go. People say, oh, we're making plans in a committee, but we need to go and ask the pastor, right? And that's granted by an institution. But there's also relational power, which is built through interpersonal connections and long-term trust, right? This means that if you have relationships, you have relational power, right? You have influence within a friend group. You know that in a church, it's not always the pastor who determines what happens. It's a person, a personality, right? Who has this relational power. They can get people to come out to meetings. people will go to them and say, what do you think about this? And that shapes the group's opinion. So using power is a good thing if we're using it for the good of others. So don't think, well, I'm not a pastor, I'm not a leader. If you have influence over another person, you are a leader and you have the ability to bring change. How can men establish norms? We're going to walk through three different things here. The first is identity language. The second is shared ownership, highlighting examples, and then clear boundaries. Identity language is when you describe or call out who people are. Peter does this in 1 Peter. You are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Once you were not a people, but now you are God's people. Peter tells them who they are, and then he calls them to action. What kind of action is he calling them to? Holiness, right? Why should we live holy lives as Christians? Because there's a bunch of rules that we're called to obey, or because God chose us to be a priesthood, and we have a mission that depends on our witness, right? And so what Peter is saying, this is who you are. I told my children the entire time they were, my older three, who are now all in their 20s, I told them, other people might act that way, but we are Myers. And this is how we behave. Family identity, right? This is who we are. And so identity language is important. Shared ownership. Moses' father-in-law said to him, what you are doing is not good. You and the people with you will certainly wear yourselves out, for the thing is too heavy to you. Heavy. You are not able to do it alone. No environment can be sustained by one individual. When everything depends on one person, it's not a culture. That's just enforcement. What we can do to shape and change norms is to convince others, right? Get people on our team, build smaller culture and connection, and then that influence will grow. So it's not necessarily, right, this is a classic pastoral mistake, is they go in and they say, I'm going to change the church, and they make some big change. They say, we're not going to do this anymore, we're going to do that now. We're going to leave off this behavior, we're going to start doing that. And then it's not successful because they tried to do it sheerly through proclamation. But when we convince another to join us, convince them of the wisdom, the rightness, the godliness of that particular behavior or that particular way of acting, now we have two working together. And now we're three. And now we're 10. And ultimately, what happens? The culture changes. So shared ownership. Third, highlight success stories and examples. Paul is great at this, by the way. Paul points out when he talks to the Romans in Romans 16, he points out people's service and he points out their relationships. When he's doing this, yes, he is saying greet this person and say hello to that person, but he's also pointing out what behaviors should be highlighted and celebrated. He's not just greeting them, he's pointing out what is consistently good. Because when we highlight what is consistently good, people say, oh, that's good. And then they imitate that behavior. Greet Mary, who has worked hard for you. He points out her service. Greet Andronicus and Junia, my kinsmen and my fellow prisoners. They were in Christ before me. Like, these are people who are important to the community. And so he's pointing that out to them. Fourth thing is define boundaries and expectations. What does that mean? That means there needs to be consequences and a plan in place when someone violates the group norms. Right? When someone is running around being a gossip, when they are sowing seeds of division, there needs to be an agreement that there's a way to deal with the people who are violating the norms. This is how we behave, And if you don't behave this way, this is what happens. Unless you have boundaries, your norms, people will learn that they're optional. Okay, so define expectation and boundaries. Okay, so we're going to review real quick because I'm going to, I told you, we're getting to group discussion. Review. Use language that describes who we are and how we act in the world. Don't go it alone. Build buy-in from those around you. Use both formal and relational power, right? If you are the boss at the place where I work, we don't send emails after 5 o'clock. And we don't call each other after 5 o'clock. We schedule send. Schedule send. Like, do not send me an email at 9:30 at night. You know what happens? When the boss sends an email at 9:30 at night, I feel like I need to work, right? And so from the top, there's a culture built in my organization that we don't send emails after hours, right? And so our boss enforces that, and we call each other out on it. There's a guy that I work with who, if you send work texts on the weekend and we don't have an event going on, right, he'll just say, there's a lot of work texts for the weekend, right? And that'll stop it. So building buy-in from those around you. Highlight success stories to affirm the desired norms and encourage others. If somebody in your church does a great thing, it might be embarrassing for them for them to be called out, right? And to be made an example or a demonstration. But if we only highlight when people are doing bad things, people will hide themselves. If we highlight when people have done amazing things or good things, then people will say, oh, that's good stuff. If I do that, I will be part of the community and I'll be living out the community's values. So highlighting success stories. This is important in family, right? If all we ever do is point out negative examples, what do people think? Right? They think I'm not loved or I'm not accepted or I'm not welcome here. But when we point out, hey, you did this and this was good, people feel like they belong. They feel like they are part of the community, and what they do is noticed. And finally, set expectations for what happens when people violate the norms. Okay. Small actions repeated consistently shape real culture. Jesus tells a parable about this. A woman hid 3 measures, put some yeast in 3 measures of flour, and she mixed it, and what happened? The loaf rose. She mixed it in, right? Mustard seeds grow into trees. That's the smallest of the seeds grows into the biggest of trees. Small actions repeated consistently shape real culture. So here's a group exercise, all right? Got to be brave. Maybe you need to stand up, move around. What I want you to do is to get in groups of 5 or 6. If you see somebody standing there alone, like, woe is me, no one loves me, love them and include them in your group. It was a small room. It's probably going to get real loud real quick. What I want you to do is to choose a topic, work, home, or church. Okay? One of the three. And talk about one norm that you're going to reject, one norm you want to see established, and one action that begins shifting the norm. Okay? Is that clear? Clear on what we're doing?
Yeah.
Be brave. Relate to one another. All right, let's do it. Groups of 5 or 6.
Yeah, exactly. My church has got a norm. These people save their seats, and it's their seats or they may die in the church. We have an early small church, but we have an 8:15 and a light. Two services. First service, people die. So that's a norm, I think. That's all we've ever got. My opinion, I check. Now, that doesn't mean going in that service. For example, I'm the moderator. So I'm the moderator of our church. If somebody says a careless word, and in the membership, we can easily go in or people in the back, everybody's meeting, they're looking at me like, if I had a gun, I'd shoot them, you know, if I bring up something. So we've got to reject, like you said, we've got to embrace inclusion. I don't know how
it's like, inclusion. It's like, so I guess that would be the establishment.
Right.
So rejection is the topic for all.
Right.
Now, to establish it, what can we do to where it's not so clear, to where everyone is included, so where no one's excluded? It's not where we feel here, but you don't feel here. So what action can we take to begin shifting the
I'm not saying that's part of a thing called church renewal, church, and that's part of Tennessee. Only one church in America. Church you used to go to. I just think it's church. Like he said, I'll tell you what, just real quick, that's about all the money we got in the whole church. SBC Ness from Alabama, Mississippi. Our church is 40. This year you guys are up to your making a new football. Yeah, you're going to Missouri again. It's still then, but great. I mean, it's a bunch of so that would be the most likely the thing that brings them together. I'll give you an example. I was a salesman. I don't really know what a three quarter friend is. I'm just not going to know. But I have some of things that I make myself fall to the world as an encourager. I appreciate you. Hey, man, I appreciate the thing we do. I've learned to do it. And I look at the
Hey guys, if I could get your attention real quick, I want to. You've been talking for about 7 minutes now, so I want to just it went quick, right? I want to pull you in real quick. I want to just ask a couple questions. One is, anybody confused about norms versus behaviors? Any confusion? We're good there.
I was a little bit.
A little bit. Norms are patterns or unwritten rules, right? Like we don't you know, we don't communicate with each other when we're gathered. We're all on our phones, right? That's a pattern of behavior. It's an unwritten rule that it's okay to do that. A behavior is saying we should talk more, right? A norm to address that would be we don't use phones at the dinner table, right? Like we've stopped the practice of using phones at the dinner table. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. How many of you guys have talked about church in your group? Okay. How many of you have talked about family in your group? And how many of you have talked about work in your group? Okay. All right. I'm going to let you guys prepare. I appreciate that mix. I think it's easy to spot these behaviors in church, probably. It's probably a little bit harder and a bit more risky to talk about family. But I want you. I'm gonna send you back to your groups to talk some more. We're gonna debrief in just a couple minutes. But if there's anybody who hasn't gotten to speak up, maybe let them share. Okay, go for it.
One actor begins shifting the norm.
The person who believes in himself, I would say, is wrong for establishing is showing premise. So,
somebody taps it there.
Oh, that's my secret.
That's true.
We're in North Carolina. Yeah, pretty much the same thing all the time.
I feel like it's festival.
The first time, we've always had like Easter eggs on Saturdays for a little bit. It's dynamic, but the women, the leadership, this year, let's not go there. Let's try someone else. So there's a entity in Carroll County, Maryland, shepherds that I have never been there. They make up they crash down 7,000 baskets. A little kid last year in Carroll County. And we came along and joined it by keeping praying over it or supporting it. So they decided what race that county was. Instead of having little kids come to our church this year, and find little plastic eggs in the grass. There was a feeling, again, I was like, but a feeling that, you know what, we need to go out. We need to go out and sweat our grass. Even our grass. It's the gospel in its entirety or nothing. We don't just not agree to agree with
you. Have to do it. All right, let me pull you in. Probably the worst task that I have to do when I run workshops is get everybody to stop talking. I hate that. I would love to let you guys go. But if I don't stop in 5 minutes, Jeremy is going to stand there in the door and watch until I stop.
He will do that.
So here's what I'd love. And you can feel free to put something up on the screen. But one or two examples that have come up about a norm that you want to reject
one you want to establish, and an action that can shift your environment. Somebody want to share? Yes, sir.
our norm kind of dealing with home is that it's okay to interrupt people. Like, well, you have something to say, you're not even listening, with you just want to interrupt and get your point out.
Yeah. So you reject that.
Yeah.
In favor of
listening, listen to what people say and take in what they're saying.
So what's one thing that can be done to shift that?
Making it known that you want to be heard and, like, I want to get this out. Listen first before, like, make it like, I want you to listen, let me speak, and then convey your thought.
I think that's really good. There's a flip side action to that too, isn't there?
One person speaks.
Listen to when other people speak.
Right, yeah. And so modeling that listening and we'll maybe earn the opportunity to speak. Yeah, I think that's fantastic. Someone else. Yes, sir.
We talked a lot about the quote, "That's how we've always done it." And we're like, we want to reject that norm entirely.
Yes.
That's a common.
We talked a lot about,
I want to hear what he's saying here. Let's not interrupt and listen. Yeah.
I want to be heard.
Yeah.
I want people to understand. We really just talked about the clearest action that shifts, especially the church, the norm is just vision casting. If the church vision is clear, then the church body is going to move in the right direction, then basically you're going to end up rejecting the norms that don't line up with that vision.
So instead of "we've always done it this way," it's "this is what could be."
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. And this is what could be.
I think that's a distinct difference from just being like, "oh, this is how we've always done it," instead of "this is how we want to do it."
Excellent.
And that's what we're working for.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fantastic. Someone else.
The ear that I'm hearing was the Spirit of saying that to the church.
That's right. That's right. I think it was Vance Habner who said the last seven words of the church are "we've always done it this way." Someone else. Share an example. Yes, sir.
We talked about work, and one that we talked about was a norm to reject is simply having our beliefs at work. We're not expected to show beliefs at work.
Your faith, you mean?
Show faith. And then we said one norm to establish was to show grace to others and to carry ourselves as Christ would. That we accept people as they are, and we give them love as best we can.
Yeah. What's a first action step to demonstrating faith at work? What's one thing that could be done?
I've always gone by the rule, you can't say "we should go to church." You can say "I go to church." And then if that resonates with someone, then they can always ask you, "hey, where do you go? What do you do?" Yeah. And then that gives you a chance to lead the conversation.
Yeah, so maybe making it known that you're a believer and then expressing things about activities.
If they ask, then you can engage. You can't force.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like I would say, I'm a therapist, so I don't cuss. But in my groups, I got ex-offenders who cuss. So I tell them, "look, I don't cuss, but that's my standard. I don't hold you to my standard."
Yeah.
So what happens is that, if you got to say 20 MFs to get your point across, you do that. But what I find happens is when they find out I don't cuss, they start to catch themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's not me forcing what I believe on them. They start to take from what I say and use it to change their process.
Yeah. I'll echo that we said the S word in our house was stupid. Like, we didn't let our kids call each other stupid. Because the minute you start using terms to describe each other and not focus on behavior, right? When you tag someone with identity language, you're defining who they are, and that gets them. And so it's like use actual words to describe behavior, not put labels on each other. And that has become natural for our family. I don't know how they talk when they're outside of the house. They're in their 20s, the olders, and so that's on them. But the norm in our house, right? Someone else, one more example. Yes, sir.
Actions shifting positive and negative. Basically, it gets down to if we treat people the way we want to be treated, you're going to find a lot of these problems are going to go out the door.
Yeah. That statement, treat others the way you desire to be treated, is a direct call to reject established norms and to establish the ones that you desire to see. Yes, fantastic. That's an excellent observation. I want to close up because we're at time. But practicing norms, what is repeated becomes expected. What is expected becomes culture. This is the thing. We shape norms. We maintain and sustain them all the time. The question is, do you want what you're shaping? Do we want a family, right, that is always on their mobile phones at dinner time? Or do we say we reject that in favor of something else? And do we establish those norms and change the dynamic? Last slide. Men as peacemakers, thinking about this as in broader terms, in terms of culture in our homes, in our workplaces, and in our families, we start with ourselves, we tend our heart, we set the tone by going first. This is why I called my brother out here in the back about listening first, right? Like, if I want to not be interrupted, I need to make sure, and man, this is me wanting to be listened to and interrupting people constantly, right? If I want people to listen to me, I need to listen to them. So go first. That, I think, is an essence of masculinity, guys. We don't wait for the world to change around us. We change the world around us. We go first. And then we build peace by defining norms. Someone has to go first. It should be you. One last thing. I just want to let you know, around the room, there are flyers for the Matthew 5-9 Fellowship, the seminars that we do. We have an amazing seminar called Talk to Your Neighbor, which is we take a testy topic and we guide people through a conversation on it. It's fantastic. People love it. And there's some business cards in the back. I would love for you guys to grab them. Let me know. We serve churches. We serve pastors. We would love to come and to minister to you. Thank you guys so much for your time. You. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Good to meet you, Larry. Eddie. Good to meet you. Rainier.